Here we are, about 4.5 months from our next presidential election. I think we all know that. What's interesting to me is that this time around, we seem to have a lot of candidates, not just presidential, but many other offices, talking about veterans and the veteran vote. It seems to be a new trend, at least in my opinion. And so I thought today that I would focus the discussion around that. So stick with us. Don't go away. We start now. Hey, everybody, and welcome here to the next episode of the Richard Leonard Show. I want to thank you, as usual, for joining us. It's always very humbling, as usual. I think I say this most weeks. It's very humbling to see the turnout and to see the show grow. Everybody here at the studio and everybody that's part of the show at the network, we all really appreciate not just you joining us here for the Richard Leonard Show, but any of the others that you may watch and participate in. So we'd like to all thank you for that. We really do appreciate it. Before we get started on today's discussion, of course, I know that you won't mind me telling you about how the show is made possible, and that is Cortez Wealth Management. Get yourselves on over to AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com and sign yourselves up for a webinar. They happen on Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let Carlos Cortez and his staff help you to plan, put together, and execute a tax-free retirement plan. Once you have gathered all this information, get a hold of them. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, for any reason at all, they'll be glad to help you out, answer any questions that you have. Again, that's AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Get on over there and check them out. Okay, so I think that, as I said in the intro, I'm kind of miffed. I'm kind of miffed at why all of a sudden this election cycle, we hear a lot from our candidates about the veteran vote. And what could be sparking that? I think that every election cycle we hear something, right? There's always something to do with veterans. There certainly is stuff talked about as it pertains to the military in general. But as it relates to veteran care, veteran benefits, and just, I struggle with what to call this, but I heard one person say awareness about veterans' issues is something that we need to strive for in order to prove that we are a grateful nation. And, okay, if that's the way some see it, that we need to prove as a society, as a community, that we need to prove to the veterans of this country, to the soldiers, the military service members, that we are a grateful nation, I suppose I can get down with that. And I agree with that. Like, we owe it to these men and women to support them, to show them that we're thankful for the sacrifice that they make. But I think that this year, more than any that I can remember, we're starting to hear about how candidates are going to ensure that veterans' care at the VA is put out, and we're going to ensure that the names of veterans are not lost, that we're going to remember always, and we're going to do all these great things. to honor the sacrifice. And to a certain respect, I don't know that I buy it, that I buy all of it. From politicians that are up for re-election, or from politicians that are looking to take out an incumbent and take over said office, whichever one they're running for. Because it's my opinion that we should be doing these things anyway. My question is, why would support of the men and women who have sacrificed their life, if need be, why would we have to talk about the idea that we need to be a grateful nation? Why is that even a discussion? And furthermore, why is that something that any one person thinks that they should campaign on? Is it because our country is in chaos currently already? Have we as a country forgotten that we should be grateful for the freedom that we have? Do the people who stand tall and talk about how much they hate this country and how our flag is a symbol of hate, but yet they're Americans, and they stomp it in the mud, and they piss on it, and they set it on fire, and they do all these things to the symbol of our freedom? Do we really need to talk about that and campaign on the idea that that's wrong and we're not going to do that anymore, and we're not going to support those efforts, we're not going to support those views? Because if you ask me, that's asinine. It's absolutely ridiculous that any one person, and it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you sit on. This has nothing to do with Joe Biden or Donald Trump or whoever your local politicians may be. It has nothing to do with who the person is. It has everything to do with that anybody thinks that this is something that's going to get you votes. I have a hard time wrapping my head around that. Wasn't this country built on the idea that we support the men and women who help make it what it was? Not just soldiers, not just veterans, but farmers, teachers who were teaching our children good to use a good moral compass. Farmers who were working their asses off to ensure that our country was fed. Police officers that kept order in our community so that we didn't have to be scared about our children going two blocks down the street with the neighborhood group of friends to play. We didn't have to worry about them getting snatched up and sold to some pedophile somewhere, or put in some child labor camp, or whatever it is that they do with these kids. It's just asinine to me. All of those people, firefighters, the industrial workers that worked hard all day in sweltering heat in factories to build amazing vehicles, cars, and trucks. Like, there was a lot of things, folks, that people did in this country that contributed to what made it amazing in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way up to now. But we don't talk about those things. Now we talk about, what are the hot topics now? The border. The border. Ukraine and Russia. Israel and Hamas. Iran. All stuff that is... And there's much more. There's much more, I'm sure. These LGBTQRS, elemental P people that can't seem to just live your life. Just live your life. Why do you need all this attention? So here's a goat trail to go down for a second. Because this one kind of grinds my gears, right? Like all these trannies and all this other shit. Why do you demand attention? Why can't you get up in the morning, go to work like everyone else, or do whatever it is you do, try to make it through the day without having some kind of meltdown or some kind of anxiety-filled screaming match with somebody. Go to whatever job it is you have, if you have one, work through the day, and go home and do what you're going to do. Why do you require attention? Why do you require this visibility? Just go do what you're going to do and shut the hell up. These are all the things that we're talking about now. And then every once in a while, you'll hear a candidate say, and we got to make sure that we take care of our veterans. We got to make sure we take care. We got to make sure that they're getting the best health care possible. We got to make sure that we get them into stable housing. The homeless veteran issue is long overdue to be fixed. The veteran suicide rate is long overdue to be fixed. It's been way too high for way too long. Veterans shouldn't have to wait for health care. They shouldn't have to wait for benefits. They shouldn't have to suffer through these diseases they got from burn pits or from Agent Orange or whatever it is. Right, there's always a hot topic. There's always a hot item with buzzwords. And it's always, you know, now it's getting to be more than just a minute or two or 30 seconds to a minute or whatever. But it's a lot more frequent. And so I don't know how many weeks ago it was, but Jason and I talked on this show about the idea that veterans make up about 11 to 13% of our nation's population. And as we know, many elections on many different levels of government are won by small margins, 1, 2, 5, 7%, something like that. Not big margins. So if veterans make up 13% of the country's population, if we're speaking about the presidential campaign, the presidential vote, well, now veterans have not only just a voice, but the ability to potentially sway an election one way or the other. And I'm not here to say that our group is going to be the ace in the hole, if you will. And when it's all said and done, and the smoke clears, that the veterans of this country are going to be the ones that decide a presidential election. That's not what I'm saying. But if a candidate, especially running for president, can secure, I don't know, 6% of the veteran vote, and that thing comes down the wire, it may be the last few percent that they need. It may be exactly what they need. So I'm not sure if that's the reason why. But I really have no other idea why all of a sudden this has become way more important than it ever has for political candidates. Sure, President Trump in his time in office, past choice, did some other pretty cool things with veterans. We got a pretty good COLA. We also got a pretty good COLA under Biden, but so did Social Security. It's all due to inflation, if you ask me. President Biden signed the PACT Act into law. But I'm not certain that was even his doing. I think the PACT Act just came to his desk and he just happened to be president. I don't think it mattered who was in the office at that point. It was time for it to be signed. And they talk about how many thousands of veterans are being helped by the PACT Act, which is good to hear. But my question is, who's tabulating the data and who's putting that data out? Now, if it's true that many veterans are getting this kind of help, then great. Then the system is working for once. But it's been my experience with the PACT Act that there's many veterans still waiting for answers. They're still waiting for answers on their claims. And maybe it's an issue of staffing. They weren't able to get all these claims processed in time. And these folks are still waiting. And it's frustrating, right? Because they put out this stuff and they talk about how great it's going to be and how much it's going to help these men and women. But I don't think that they have a gauge on how long it's going to actually take. I don't know that they did hire enough staff, enough people to process this influx of claims. Because the biggest travesty is that we got men and women all worked up, got them all excited about the passing of this legislation, that they're going to get help, they're going to get benefits, they can get disability compensation, they can get pharmacy help, they can get health care, they can get these issues treated, and everything should be good. But there's many that are still waiting, and some of them who are still waiting, unfortunately, are dying while they wait. And I don't know that that necessarily falls on any one person's shoulders. But it's hard to not be frustrated by it. Maybe these veterans are just victims of circumstance. Maybe their ailments progressed far enough that they just weren't going to live long enough for the PACT Act to kick in and help them. Had it came 1 or 2 years earlier, maybe it would have. But honestly, that's probably a woulda, coulda, shoulda type situation. But it's still frustrating because we're losing people. Not only are we losing veterans to their own hands, but we're losing veterans to ailments that they incurred during their service. We're losing people to ailments incurred during their sacrifice. And so my question is it unreasonable? Is it unreasonable of us, whoever us is, me, let's just say, is it unreasonable of me to be frustrated by this type of thing when it's out of my control? Is it something that I should even be talking about on my podcast when 40, 50, 60, 70,000 people watch it? Am I wasting your time by talking about this? And I don't think that I am. I think that it's important for people to hear this stuff because some of it is just, quite honestly, some of it is just bullshit. Some of it is just a big, steaming, stinking pile of bullshit. Now, as I said about some of the PACT Act guys, you know, maybe some of them are victims of circumstance. They just didn't make it. But it's a hard pill to swallow because these men and women, many of them that are suffering through some of these conditions that are conditions that are granted due to the PACT Act are aggressive. They're aggressive. They're certainly not fun. They're painful. And some of these folks are dying miserable deaths. But also is this something I should be talking about or something that's worthwhile to have a discussion about? Because We knew when we signed up. We knew what the risk was. We knew what the cost may be. And if you're a person that served, and you can honestly say that you didn't think that there was ever a chance that there was risk to your life at some point in time, possibly, you're ignorant as hell. Unless you were some kind of officer or something and found yourself in some job and at the Pentagon or in DC somewhere and you stayed in some career track that didn't let you leave DC or the Pentagon or whatever. But I think that those are small group of people. But guys like me and Jason, Ben, who's been on this show before, and many others. Mike Wellnitz, who's been on the show before. We were all aware what the cost may be. And we were down for it. I'll use Mike as a good example. Mike Wellnitz, who's been on this show two or three times now. Him and I were on the same team, not even the same platoon, but the same team when we were deployed to Iraq. Mike Wellnitz and I put on a lot of miles up and down the highways of Iraq together. We didn't sit in the same truck together, but we were on the same missions over and over and over and over again. And we used to talk about it as a group. Never very seriously, I might add. But we used to talk about it. We used to, as a team, make jokes about whose turn it was to, who's coming back tomorrow. Who's coming back tomorrow with bouncy legs? You know, there was the guy that ran in the Olympics with the prosthetics. He shot his girlfriend and said he thought she was a deer or something while he was sitting on the John. I think he was from South Africa. I forget what the guy's name was, but we used to reference his bouncy legs and talk about who's going to get bouncy legs tonight. And all those kind of maybe a sick, twisted joke or sick and twisted sense of humor. You kind of have to do that. Or you'll go nuts. But deep down, and I'd say even before we deployed to Iraq, you see, that group I deployed with, we all went to infantry school together. We all learned to be grunts together. Our platoon sergeant at the time, his first name is Hector. He told us, because we all went to school to be air defenders, we all went to school to shoot shoulder-fired Stinger missiles at aircraft, and that was our job. But they did away with the air defense artillery in the reserve components, and so we had to pick a new job. And our platoon sergeant, Hector, came to us and was like, "Listen, men, we are getting deployed. We are going to Iraq. Now, you all have to reclass. You all have to pick a new job because air defense artillery is no more. And you cannot deploy as an air defender. It's just not a thing anymore." He said, "Now, feel free to pick whatever job you want." He said, "But if you all want to deploy together, fight together, and most importantly, all come home together, you all go to infantry school." And he said, "We will all go together." Excuse me. And so with the exception of two of us, one guy decided he was a conscientious objector. "Yeah, well, get out of here. See you later." The other guy, Nate, decided he wanted to be a chaplain's assistant, which was fine. He went to chaplain assistant school, but he stayed in the unit, so he still got to be part of the crew. We didn't work together when we'd leave the FOB, but we got to see him all the time, so that was all right. But the rest of us all went to infantry school together. We all deployed together. We all came home together. But at no time were we ever confused about what the cost might be. We already knew. And as we got deeper and deeper into our tour, and guys started dying, nobody from our company died. But dudes in our battalion died, people we knew. It just got more real. And so then it gives you a whole different frame of reference, a whole different frame of mind. But you know what? We'd wake up every morning, you grab your shit, and get out to that truck, you go to the staging area, you mount your weapons, you go draw more ammo, you do your functions check, you do your PCCs and PCIs, you load your radios, you make sure there's fuel in the truck, you make sure the tires are good, you make sure that you can talk to hire on the radio. You make sure you got food, water, Red Bull, Monsters, and peach tea. In our truck, Evan had to make sure he had candy, or he'd be grumpy. You make sure you have your smokes. You make sure you have flares. You make sure you have chemlight. I mean, there's a mental checklist. I could probably go through it now and tell you everything that I needed for a mission. And then you go do it. And many nights there was nothing. No IEDs, no small arms fire, no RPGs, no trouble. But some nights there was. And so in those instances, when the fight was on, and there's rounds flying everywhere, and there's RPGs skipping across the road, and if we were escorting fuel tankers, and they're leaking fuel out of their tankers, and one of our guys grabbed a piece of Twizzlers that had been in the windshield of the Humvee for 3 months, and it's rock hard trying to shove it in bullet holes in these gas tankers so they wouldn't be leaking, so we could get fuel to where it was supposed to go, because those guys need fuel. Oh, why the bullets are flying. Man, it got intense. And then it's over. And then you get to wherever it is you're going. You get into some base, into a safe area. And you can take off your body armor, take your helmet off, clear your weapon, but be careful because it's red hot. You just put 2,000 rounds through it, or 1,000 or 5,000, depending on where you're at and what happened. But it's hot, and your heart's beating, and you're sweating like a hostage. And you sit back and you take a deep breath. And then this smile comes over your face. And you can't believe. You just can't effing believe what happened. And you know what? You know what your next thought is? When can we do it again? Folks, I'm telling you, anybody out there who has been actively engaged in combat, a firefight is probably, hands down, the biggest, most intense adrenaline rush you will ever feel. There's nothing like it. It sounds silly to people who haven't been there, who haven't experienced it. But I'll tell you what, you enter one, you participate, and you most of the time dominate. And it's like you don't even remember it all happening. When people say, don't think and just let your training take over, they're 1,000% right. 1,000%. because there are many aspects of that event you just don't remember. You can see them, but you don't remember how you got there. Like if you had to change the barrel on your weapon, you don't really remember thinking, oh my God, I better change my barrel. Maybe you just bent down, picked it up because it's second nature, or somebody in your truck just handed it up to you because they knew it was time, and you hit the button, slide it out, throw it down, and don't, try not to burn your leg or anybody else, throw the new one in, pull that bolt back and rocking. You're back to rocking. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now, man. It's it's an amazing feeling. Okay, and so I went all the way around four blocks to go across the street to just say that we knew the cost, the potential cost. And so is this a waste of time talking about this? And I think no, I think it's not. Clearly, or I wouldn't be talking to you about it. But I think to a certain point, it's a waste of their time. It's a waste of these candidates' time to all of a sudden be talking about how we're going to better help veterans, how we're going to better treat veterans. Because we're not dumb, we're not blind, and we're not stupid. We can tell that there's an influx. I'm talking about our community. Is it nice to hear more about what veterans may need and how they're going to help us and what they're going to do for us and maybe talk about some mistakes that were made in the past? Yeah, maybe that's nice. It'd be a little nicer if when they talk about mistakes made in the past, they were talking about their mistakes, not the other guy's mistakes. Because, see, now nobody ever takes ownership. And I think the reason why veterans are so disgruntled about this thing sometimes is that nobody takes ownership. And here we have sick, dying, or dead veterans and we want to know who's responsible. These guys did what they said they were going to do. Well, when the fuck is our country going to do what they said they're going to do? And I think that's how they feel. So now some greasy politician shows up on TV or at some campaign event or some town hall or comes knocking on your door and they're going to talk to you about how things are going to be better for you as a veteran. But we remember. Remember when our buddy Johnny died, waiting for care. And there was no explanation. There was no help for his family. Yeah, there was a few guys to do a salute, a 21-gun salute at his funeral, which is pretty impressive, by the way. But it's usually done by some 75-year-old dudes from the Legion, which is fantastic, and I'm grateful that they do that. But it's still not, I don't know. We'll get back to it. I got to take a break, though. I'm severely over time. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
There's a whole bunch of stories that have to be dug into, rethought, reconsidered, and in some cases completely discarded.
As modern Americans, we've been spoon-fed this dumbed-down, cartoonish, simplified version of history. It's all fake. It's all bullshit. everything that we have been taught is part of a self-serving narrative written by the people who will say and do anything to keep us on a leash. Now, this version of history, some big-name corrupt families like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and their many associates are credited over and over and over again with propelling human development. Throughout the late 18 and early 1900s, almost every major American city was burnt to the ground. What if we really are quite literally living atop the ashes of an advanced civilization that's been hidden from us for our entire lives?
Hey, folks, welcome back here to last segment of the show. Sorry, before the break, I feel like I had a little Joe Biden moment when I just went, I don't know. And that's just because I get frustrated. And I do get lost in my words and in my thoughts. It just seems so blatantly obvious to me sometimes that the powers that be just spew nonsense about our community. And I would rather, to be quite honest, I would rather let the government just tell us that we don't get anything. To be quite honest, I would just rather them tell us, hey man, you signed up for a job, you did your job, you got paid. Thanks for your time, here's a flag. And if you're in long enough to retire, here's a pension. If you got hurt, here's some compensation. And then send us on our way. But then they got to throw in education benefits, and they got to throw in VA home loans, and they got to throw in Voc Rehab, and all these other programs, housing assistance, clothing allowance. I mean, there's a lot of programs out there that the VA offers. But the trouble is that nobody knows about them. And maybe that's our doing. Maybe that's our doing because we don't inquire about what else is available. We don't ask. We don't search it out. But also understand that kind of thing goes against the nature of the United States veteran for the most part, because we're taught. You're raised in the military to not question. Don't question authority. Life will be so much easier if you just do what you're told. When it's time to eat, go eat. When it's time to sleep, you sleep. And in between, do your job as assigned. When you have downtime to do with what you please, then you do with what you please. You do whatever it is you want. Just don't get arrested. And for God's sakes, don't make a bunch of babies. But we instead have all this stuff. We have all this stuff available to us. And I'm not going to lie to you. Some of the stuff is pretty cool. But as it pertains to our candidates publicly talking about how they're going to help us, I question how genuine that is. And I also wonder, and I just thought of this right this second, is it for our benefit, for the benefit of the veteran or the military person? Or are they saying that for the benefit of the civilian? Or both? And what I mean by that is, are these guys talking about how great they're going to be for veterans so that they can try to win votes for staunch military and veteran supporters who may not have served? Because they don't know the difference, many people. Many people in this country have no idea, especially young people. Even young people who may have a family member who has or is serving, they don't quite know what's what. You see, our society is not set up to be engaging in that way. Our society is set up to be all about what's on this thing, on your cellular telephonic device. That's what our society is all set up for. Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and this and that and the other thing. Which is fine, because that's where we're at, right? We're watching this on social media. But I also think that there's healthy doses of these things, because of course we live in an age now where that's kind of how the world turns, right? Like, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of information that gets put out on many different platforms. But you got to be somewhat knowledgeable of where to look and what to look for. What's a credible source and what is just a person spewing some shit to get a bunch of watches and a bunch of views to make some money? Or do these people really want to help? And so that's the beautiful thing, I think, about about the Stu Peters Network, where you're finding this show, is that there isn't anybody on here that I know of, there isn't anybody in our network that I know of, that is on here solely for the purpose of making a ton of money. Because we don't make a ton of money. I don't, I know. I make some. But if I had an idea that my show over the last 119 weeks was not helpful to anybody, it didn't bring insight to anybody, nobody could relate, nobody found any purpose in it at all, well, then I'd move on to the next thing. But I don't think that that's true. And so that's why we're here. That's why I'm here. I do genuinely give a shit about the state of other veterans in this country and what they got going on. Because I believe we get a lot of lip service. We get a lot of lip service from the powers that be. And so I think that it's only right, And I'm pretty sure I've said this a few times already in the last few months on this show. Question these people. If they start spouting off about veterans and military issues, question them. Ask them why they think it's important. And my guess is that for a lot of them, you're going to get some cookie cutter answer. Well, because these are the people that ensure America's freedom and we owe it to them to blah, 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 blah. And maybe that's true. But see if they have something else, something creative to say. Maybe they do. I don't know. I would like to think, I would like to think that we have people running who find the value, authentically find the value in the sacrifice made into this country, into its people, into moving our country and everything in it to the next level. And furthermore, using the skills of the men and women who have sacrificed and fought and served this country. We've talked about it before on the show, for example, using veterans to secure our schools. Veterans need mission. They need a mission. That's where they thrive. Even if it's a small mission or a huge mission, everybody has a different capacity for these types of things. If we can give veterans mission and keep them mission driven, I think we will see a lot different type, and maybe that's not the right word, but a lot different type of veteran walking around our communities. Somebody who's more confident, somebody who's a lot more proud of who they are and the service that they provided. I hate to say it, but I hope that we're not getting back to this era like we were in Vietnam, where it wasn't really acceptable to be in the military. It wasn't acceptable to be a veteran, where these guys didn't advertise it, or they didn't talk about it, they didn't admit to it. We need to hold our elected officials at every level of government accountable for the words that come out of their mouths, and in some cases, the words that don't come out of their mouths. And when they start getting up on stages, on the radio, on TV, on the internet, wherever they're at, and they start talking about subjects like veterans and military issues, and I won't say we, because maybe you don't feel that way. If you feel like it's lip service, I implore you to call them out. I'm not saying you have to be rude to them and be put on this whole big show, but call them out. Ask them what they mean. Ask them to tell you more. Ask them for more information. And I'd be willing to bet that there are many of them that don't have any more information. But we must hold their feet to the fire. Way too much work has been done. Way too much work has been done. Way too many lives have been altered and lost for these folks to talk about this community like they know exactly what's going on and then do nothing about it. And then we just sit back and assume that they're telling the truth. You may be comfortable with it. You just might be. But I'm not. And I'll tell you what, I'm anxiously awaiting the day some person running for Congress comes knocking on my door, because we're going to have one hell of a conversation. Anyway, folks, with that, that's all the time that we have. I'd like to thank you again for joining us, as usual. Please take care of yourselves. Have a wonderful, wonderful week ahead. Have an even better evening. We will see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Good night.